The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of 55KRC, The Talk Station, and Clear Channel Worldwide.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, Cincinnati's only gun talk show. Join us. We're going to explore the topic of firearms and your rights as a law-abiding citizen. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown, your source for premium firearms and ammunition. Now here's your host, John Johnston, on 55KRZ, The Talk Station.
Good evening and welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown, your source for premium firearms and ammunition. I'm your host, John Johnston. As always, check us out on ballisticradio.com and facebook.com/ballisticradio. Happy Father's Day to everybody. Your work is appreciated. Thanks, Dad. Joining me in studio tonight, Mr. Andy Ulrich. Andy, how's it going?
Good to be here. Happy Father's Day.
Hey, thanks. Appreciate it. Waiting on the line is Mr. Craig Douglas, also known as South Narc, if you dig around on the interwebs at all and have run across that handle before. That's who that is. He's going to be talking with us about some of the things that we can do in our everyday life to stay out of trouble. And I know that sounds vague, but we'll get into it and sort of just go from there. It's kind of interesting that a lot of times, especially, you know, this show, we talk about tactics a lot, or weapon selection, or training to do that will make us better shooters and all that. And a lot of the classes are focused on that. You know, how can I be a better shooter? Well, something that we tend to lose sight of is the best fight, the best possible fight that we can get into is the one that we avoid entirely. And, you know, a lot of people will say, oh, situational awareness, that's how you avoid things like that. That's not true. It helps. It puts us in a better position if we get into a situation where violence is necessary. But just because I notice somebody rolling up on me doesn't mean I know what to do to make them stop, short of, you know, gunplay or physical violence getting involved. And that's actually one of the things that that Craig teaches. Just how do we handle people before we've, you know their intentions. But I'll let him talk about that because he's, you know, smarter than I am. So yeah, anyway, just something to keep in mind is like I said, we want to avoid the fight. And that's a lot of the times when you hear people that are not gun people or people that are not, you know, and I'm doing bunny ears here, tactical people, you hear them talk about things and the assumption they're making is that, you know, we're just bloodthirsty individuals that are out there raring to go. And that may be true in some instances, very, very limited circumstances. I've not met anyone like that, but I'm sure, you know, for anyone that I can think of, they're existing somewhere under the sun. But for the most part, everyday people, just like everyone else, we just want to go about our business and get home to our families at the end of the day, or our cats, if we're cat people, or dogs, or whatever our lives entail. Archer episodes on Netflix. Zing. Anyway, sorry, I had to. You know, just whatever it is that you want to get home to is sort of the goal. So sometimes that involves getting in a deadly force encounter with someone, if that's the last option. And other times that involves avoiding it entirely. So I could go on, and I do like hearing the sound of my own voice, but since he's already on the line, I'm just going to let Craig talk about everything. So, Craig, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Hey, Craig, how's it going?
Good, man. How are you, John?
Oh, not too bad. I appreciate you taking the time on your Sunday to come on the show. It's very much appreciated. So
yeah, that's no problem, man. I appreciate you having enough interest in me and what I do to invite me on. So let's get to it.
Oh, yeah, perfect. And for full disclosure, everyone, I've been through not all of Craig's courses, but I did go through the Managing Unknown Contacts module. And I have to say, I've been through a lot of classes. Craig's is the only one that I use every single day of my life. I cannot stress how useful Craig's stuff is. So keep that in mind. He's going to be in the area end of July, and I'll talk about that at the end of the show. But Craig, do you mind going into your background a little bit, just telling everyone sort of about yourself and how this came about?
Sure. Let's see. As far as the arms professional background, I have 21 years as a cop. I retired in 2011, And I was in the Army for 4 years, and I've been in and out of martial arts most of my life. So about 9 years ago now, a buddy of mine who's now deceased, unfortunately, Paul Gomez, had been badgering me for quite some time to kind of hang a shingle out. And finally, and it's kind of a funny story, I was getting married at the time, and I wasn't making enough overtime to pay for the wedding, and Paul offered to send up, you know, some flyers and host a couple of courses for me. And the original intention was, well, just make enough scratch to, you know, pay for the wedding and get out. But after those first two or three classes, I found that I really liked the people that were attending. They were very motivated. Really brought out the best in me as an instructor. And they still do. You know, it's really one of the drivers of why I continue to do a roadshow. And it just went from there. You know, there was no marketing plan or anything like that. It just happened. And that's really it, man. So time as a cop, most of that time as a cop was spent working narcotics, a little more than half. And 2 years of that was spent strictly in an undercover capacity. Ran a SWAT team also for 12 years. And I think those are the hot points, John.
Yeah. And it is funny how things just sort of tend to happen. So the thing that I found interesting about, I guess, obviously when we're taking a class or when we're presented with a situation, there's some sort of overlying problem that we're trying to solve. And the approach that you take in defining the problem that we're trying to solve was what I was most interested in. We got about a minute and a half before commercial, but just in our day-to-day lives, what are we trying to do as far as what are we trying to identify?
Well, essentially, we're trying to identify, you know, criminals, and that's a lot more difficult than it seems at times because they're pretty good at what they do. You know, there's an old adage in law enforcement that we only catch the stupid ones.
Right.
So what I try and do at the beginning of any class that I do is frame the problem, at least objectively, as I understand it. And a lot of that came from the period of time that I spent working undercover, where unfortunately I was robbed a number of times and had a bunch of nasty things happen to me. So that's what we do. We start off with what I'll call the criminal assault paradigm, or how basically criminals do business, how they punch a time clock, essentially, just like regular people punch a time clock.
Yeah, I mean, I guess everyone's got their chosen profession. Just
absolutely.
Some are less socially acceptable and useful than others.
Sure.
I guess 30 seconds left or so. Just most training that you found not very useful when you actually were putting it in place on the
that was a realization that I had, is that there was no contextual underscoring of the training. It was always sterile. It was always on a range, on a you know, one-dimensional target. It was always on a dojo. You know, it was never on concrete or anything like that. And it was always sterile, and it was always an equal initiative event, which I think we'll probably discuss after the commercial. But
yeah.
It really wasn't framed well. The motor skills, whatever they were, whether they were weapons-based or non-weapons-based, were never placed in the context that I was actively operating in as a police officer or an undercover police officer.
Right. And we'll get into that a little bit more. Do you have a commercial coming up? When we get back, we're going to talk with Craig a little bit more about just managing those unknown contacts and things that we can do to avoid conflict. Right now, you're listening to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station.
Wealthy and wise, the Steve Perrin Coordinated Financial Planning Studios. This is 55 KRC, the talk station.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55 KRC, the talk station, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown. Right now on the line, we have Mr. Craig Douglas talking with us about all sorts of interesting things. Craig, are you still there?
I am, sir.
Excellent. So we were talking about equal initiative. Can we get into that a little bit more and explain what you mean by equal initiative, especially in a training concept?
Sure. If you think about any kind of self-defense discipline we do, typically with partners, okay, whether it's hand-to-hand stuff or airsoft or things like that, most of the time it's trained with equal initiative, where both parties, you know, meet up with their gear. It could be a garage training group, a range, a shoot-house type facility where they're whacking each other with airsoft, that kind of thing.
Right.
But both people know that they're in play and they agree to begin on the same queue, you know, at the same time. And if we think about, you know, the way bad guys operate, you know, if I could give you a soundbite about most criminals, we could probably say they're opportunists, and they tend to attack when conditions favor them the most and favor you the least. So
they're not really
looking for a contest of skill. So the chances of them squaring up with you for a boxing match or playing whack-a-mole around a piece of cover, like we've seen a lot of force and force evolutions, probably not going to happen that way. You know, and basically the way a lot of these criminal assaults happen is what I describe as an unequal initiative event, meaning either the bad guy makes the move on you and you didn't see it coming, or you saw him coming before things got really nasty and you made the move on him. And the move doesn't necessarily have to be drawing a gun, but somebody seizes initiative from the other person, and to a large extent, at least what I've seen, that really frames realistically what kind of motor skill you can and cannot pull off, and it strongly affects reaction time. So, you know, a lot of times when we're under some layer of tasking, when we're doing something else, like if I'm in a parking garage and I have the little cheap watch battery that goes out of my car fob, and I know there's a key, an emergency key down in there, but I've never dickered around with it, you know, and I'm focused on that car fob, trying to figure out how to get that emergency key out, boom, there's a good chance that's when that move is going to get made. Usually, in circumstances like that, at least when I've done this simulated, what I see are things like draw stroke times increasing a lot. Mm-hmm. Now, all of a sudden, you know, the guy that has that's practiced diligently for a 1-3 or a 1-4, now he's typically up by about another second. So now we're looking at a 2-3 or a 2-4 with a significantly higher fumble factor. You see guns coming out in shirts, cover garments not getting cleared, people discharging rounds where rounds don't need to go before they get on target. So I think when you frame the problem like that and we train to that possibility, you know, then that's a real, real important thing for a student to understand and to get a handle on, just how bad it can get.
And just kind of train for the, instead of the best case scenario, the worst case scenario, and hope it falls somewhere better for you, I suppose.
I tend to be an outlier, John, you know, as far as that kind of, you know, trainer. I tend to stay in worst case scenarios, you know, entangled,
yeah.
Grapple, range, gunfight stuff, solo structure movement problems, you know, gunfights in cars, that kind of stuff, you know, at least the things that reflect, you know, my experience.
Right. And that, well, I mean, and that makes a lot of sense, too, because that's most of what you had to deal with when you were doing the undercover thing.
Sure,
so,
sure.
And
absolutely.
Actually, good on you for staying in your lane and not trying to do something else, which I've seen a lot of, especially recently for some reason. But I guess so. The whole concept behind managing unknown contacts, a contact being someone that we run into in our day-to-day life, and obviously the unknown part, we don't know what their intentions are. Can you get into that a little bit?
Sure. So when you use that term managing unknown contacts, that's a phrase that I came up with, and guys kind of acronym it, and we'll just say muck like that. That's a phrase I came up with to describe my idea of a strategy template, for lack of a better term, for deselecting yourself away from the way a lot of these criminal assaults begin, you know, at least again based on my experience. So what it does, it starts looking at not letting it get to the point where you've got a gun stuck under your chin, giving some idea of body language that people exhibit before things go south, and that's not absolute. And some simple strategies consisting of what you say, how you move, and what you do with your hands, so it doesn't get to, you know, a rolling around in beer and broken glass, horizontal entangled gunfight.
I mean, and for folks that don't think that ever happens, and I'm not going to get into the politics behind it or say what I believe is how it happened, but the Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman incident is a perfect example of what can go on in that sort of situation.
That's more common
right.
than what a lot of people would like to think.
Yeah.
You know, it's I never had somebody hold me in, at gunpoint or rob me when I was buying drugs from 7 yards away. It was always a contact range gun hold. You know, I've got some hosts and some guys that train with me nationwide, one of whom ran a chain of convenience stores for quite some time. He got robbed several times.
Mm-hmm.
And in discussing this with him, same thing. You know, he never had a guy that didn't stick him with the gun and make some kind of hand attachment, grabbing him, shoving him to a register. You know, and it's very simple. You can watch all this stuff on video.
You
can see it on YouTube. Yeah. That's
tons
one of the
of
best research
there.
Things there is to go to YouTube and watch how these guys are doing their job.
Yeah, and it's I guess we'll get into that a little bit. So obviously the part before we get to the part where they're grabbing you and putting a gun up under your chin, there's generally interview phase of the interaction where they're trying to close space.
Correct. And what I like to do is describe, you know, we always get sound bites to words like awareness. You know, I ask people, you know, hey, are you more or less aware at various times of the day? And typically the answer is yes. And when I ask them to describe that process, how do you become more aware? I don't get anything real defined. It's very notional. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think if we think about awareness, you know, it's not a verb. How do you aware? You know, how do you do that? So I tend to describe awareness as kind of a visual field, since we use that sense more than any other, that's in a constant state of broadening and narrowing. And, you know, when we're really narrowed down, almost like looking through a drinking straw,
mm-hmm.
that's typically the kind of behavior that draws predatory bad guys, you know, and typically is what makes us vulnerable, you know, in those circumstances. So what I like to do is describe that field of awareness and then think about the things that tend to narrow our field of awareness, things like trying to type out a text message on an iPhone, okay, or, you know, sitting in a car and balancing your checkbook after a purchase, little things like that, you know, that tend to narrow whatever, you know, minor chore, whatever minutia that you've allowed yourself to get absorbed into. That's the kind of behavior that narrows that awareness field and allows people to get into that kind of contact range where they can, you know, stick guns under your chin. So range is inextricably tied into time. The more range you have, the more time you have. The less range you have, the less time you have. Time to draw a gun, time to use some kind of verbal strategy, time to run away, time to squirt somebody in the face with pepper, whatever. But you need range.
And it seems like, too, that often but not always, the further away you are from someone, if it does go to guns, generally that favors the better trained individual.
Absolutely. We want to, if we're going to be in a gunfight, okay, we want to be the guy that shoots first. We want to be the guy that has the gun up in his eye line, and we'd like to be looking through the front, you know, or the rear aperture at the front sight. You
mm-hmm.
know, that's the way I would like my gunfight to begin, at equal light level on top, no doubt.
Right. And that's obviously what we're trying to work for there is, first, A, avoiding the gunfight. B, if it gets to guns, doing it from as far away as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, that doesn't always happen. So you said that range equals time, and one of the interesting things you do, at least in that I've seen, is pretty much play the hand slap game from a foot away versus two steps away, or close to, and I'm explaining
correct.
It wrong. But it was interesting to see the amount of times that someone could successfully defend you just poking them in the chest from just 6 inches difference.
Yes. And the reason I do that little drill is to show that just a little bit of range has a significant impact on outcome. You know, that 6 inches. And typically what I'll do is I'll play the hand slap game, trying to touch somebody in the chest before they touch my hand. And I'll do that 4 or 5 times.
Right.
And I'm tapping them every time. And then I'll measure from toe to heel and toe to heel. So I don't even take a complete step back, literally just my shoe size. And then we'll do the drill again. And typically we see a 100% increase, you know, as far as their ability to touch me before I touch them. So it's a pretty powerful demonstration. People get it immediately. You know, anybody, regardless of background, understands, wow, you know, a little bit means a whole lot as far as range is. So that's what we're trying to do with the idea, or one of the main goals in this strategy template is maintain range, and that's why we have real defined ways we interact with someone verbally, ways we move, and what we're doing with our hands while all this is going on. Three little simple things, or sound simple.
Right, right. Well, that's, yeah, it's not as easy as it sounds. 40 seconds or so. As far as verbalization goes, difference between having to think while something like this is going on versus having what a playlist, I think, is as you refer to it, what we're going to say. How does that work? Just real quick.
Pretty much, we want to avoid getting into dialogue, okay? Anytime we're in dialogue, anytime we're answering questions or thinking of responses, you know, that tends to slow reaction time down quite a bit. So what I like people to think about is what the end state is of verbalizing or engaging someone verbally is, and that's to maintain range without creating a problem. It doesn't mean you yell at everybody that walks up to you as a stranger, okay? You know, that's not what that means at all. And I give some recommendations. You know, what I like to do with the template is give everybody a baseline to start from and then let them play with it and experiment with it. You know, make some mistakes, do some things right, come across as loony, you know, and kind of figure out, hey, okay, what realistically will I say, won't I say, you know, what seems to work. And I even tell people, hey, you know, if you have to make an excuse, you know, for somebody not encouraging on you, then make an excuse if you need to do that.
Hi, it's Brian Thomas, Monday in the Morning Show. I'm sure my dad is mad. Dad gets mad. He vents his spleen. He does it at Monday, 7:05. Tune in. We'll find out together what's under his skin.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55KRC, the talk station. Brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown. Had our own little Managing Unknown commercials there. I stole that from Tom off Facebook. Thanks, Tom. For folks just tuning in, we are talking to Craig Douglas, a former undercover police officer, international conflict avoidance trainer. I think I just coined that term for him, but hey, whatever, I like it. You can call us at 749-5500 if you're local, or 1-800-823-TALK, T-A-L-K, 8255. We'll try and take your calls at the end of the evening if we're able. I'm going to try and make time for everyone to ask Craig questions. Anyway, Craig, are you still there?
I am, and the acronym for International Conflict Avoidance Trainer would be ICAT. That's
nice.
Pretty hot.
Nice. You should do that. You should.
I should.
I want credit, though, on the business card.
You'll get it.
So for those who were not listening at the beginning, Craig teaches all sorts of awesome stuff to all sorts of awesome people. But mainly the point is to not have to shoot someone, to not get shot, stabbed, bludgeoned with a heavy lead object, what have you.
Sucker punched.
Yeah, that doesn't. There was that guy that died at Dickman's Sport Cafe, I think it was, that got hit, fell on the curb stop, died, one punch. Anyway, back to the guy that we want to listen to. So we were talking about verbalization and end states, and do you think, just getting back to that in a little bit, do you think people lose sight of the goal in the middle of the conversation and just don't tailor the words for getting people away from them?
Yeah, and even what you just said, conversation.
Yeah,
if you really think about it, it's not a conversation. Okay,
right.
It's I like to explicitly think about this as monologue, not dialogue. You're talking at someone, not with someone. Now, that doesn't mean you can't get into a conversation. Okay, but I'm not going to get into a conversation with a stranger if I'm in a place that supports a crime while that person is continually bearing down on me until they're in that average, you know, within arm's reach, interpersonal communication range.
Which right.
Comes. That's where people talk, you know. And that's what we're trying to avoid, you know. So, you know, thinking about the end state, and the end state is, with your verbalization, halting encroachment. Now, you know, if I get some guy that I see, you know, from a good distance away, and he's walking towards me, and I begin verbalizing with him, and let's say dude stops, and maybe he just wants, you know, a pair of jumper cables. I may let myself get into a conversation after I do a couple other things. But while this guy's trying to get closer to me, you know, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to let myself get into a conversation. I'm going to stick to my playlist, and I'm going to remember the end state of, hey, the whole reason I'm saying anything to begin with is to get him to stop. I'm not being interrogatory. This is not a conversation. This is not dialogue. It's none of those things.
Yeah. And just, I think that a lot of folks are, and I've had this conversation with other people, but I think a lot of folks are so afraid of being rude to someone that they allow bad things to happen to them that do not need to happen.
I see that all the time. People are just on, you know, and if you think about it, you know, it's probably most regular, well-adapted people were you know, had that kind of thing socialized out of them by their parents.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, worry about starting problems. And here's the thing, you know, I get all kinds of people in class, and I can't teach someone verbal agility. I can certainly enhance it with good exercise. So starting with this basic template, you know, it's where we start and where we go from there and allowing people to personalize it, but always keeping that end state in mind that, hey, you're not getting in conversations with strangers in dark parking garages at 11 p.m. at night while they're trying to get closer to you. It's just not a good practice, and very well may end up with you getting a gun stuck under your chin.
Yeah.
So there you go.
I guess some people do that for fun. I don't know. I've never been one of them. And luckily, I've been rude my entire life, so the whole keeping people away from me thing works almost like magic.
It doesn't bother you at all.
No, not at all.
There you go. Good.
I just actually had something like that happen at work, and I got someone I'm acquainted with. I kind of posted the details of the conversation, and he asked me at the end of it. He's like, hey, I wasn't there, but was profanity needed? I'm like, well, I wanted them to leave, and they hadn't left yet, and that was what got them to leave. So, yeah, I'd say so. And you kind of talk about that a little bit as far as when we're trying to get people to halt their actions, when we're trying to get them to stay away from us, and they haven't listened to the first thing you've said. Now, obviously, without using profanity on the radio, since the FCC will charge me more money than I make in a year, can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. The first thing I like, and the way I frame this as far as the verbal component of managing a no contact, is to start off with a simple request to not come any closer. That's clear in a level tone of voice, something like, hey, can you just hold up? Hey, would you mind just staying over there? You know, something that is a request. You're asking someone not to come any closer to. Now, provided they hear it, you know, and it registers a number of other things, you know, that may be enough, you know, and then maybe after you do a couple other things, you can get into a conversation with someone. If they continue to get closer and encroach, they talk over you, they didn't hear you, they don't speak English, they're developmentally disabled. There could be a number of reasons that a benign person would continue to encroach after you asked them not to. What I recommend that people do is definitively escalate from a request to a command. That's articulable. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, I asked you not to come any closer. If that didn't seem to have an effect, so I told you not to come any closer. And I really recommend bumping the volume up significantly. If you think about, you know, your volume, if I were to put it on a 1 through 10 scale, normally your conversational volume, if it's at a 2, I recommend you bump that to a 10 immediately.
Right.
And when I have Leos in class, I like to get them to think, law enforcement officers.
Thank you.
I like to get them to think about this kind of like a bang without a flash. It needs to be jarring and startling.
Right.
So, and if that doesn't work, we discuss the merits of or lack of merits of profanity. And, you know, usually I'll ask the question because I tend to be somewhat Socratic when I teach. And a variety of responses, no, you should never use profanity. Well, you know, maybe that's the only thing that'll work. And what I tell people is that just from my time as a street cop, you know, I can tell you that profanity is part of everyday criminal speech in the lexicon. They use it. They understand it. And I give people two guidelines. The choice to use profanity is theirs, okay, but I give them guidelines on using it. Number one, if you don't normally use profanity, now is not the time to start because it's going to be read as fake and weak probably by anybody in street culture.
Yeah.
Secondly, if you're going to drop an F-bomb, if you're going to use profanity, try not to be insulting with it. And the example I give is, hey, is there a difference between back the, you know, blank up and back up mother, you know,
right,
blanker? And in one, you've dropped an F-bomb to accentuate that message to stay away. And the other, you call this guy a bad name and possibly create an affair of honor, a fist fight, or whatever else. So that's the idea, is to think about the verbal component of the strategy template as something that's escalating, de-escalating, up and down with that constant end state of maintaining range, not allowing yourself to lapse into a conversation. And I do like to think about this as a playlist, and it's going to be thought of as a playlist. That means probably it needs to be physically rehearsed, because we don't want to be thinking of the magic phrase and the magic language to stop this guy when it happens for real. So I provide and make the guys role play and physically rehearse all this stuff.
Yeah, and it's just useful to have that. It's kind of like a verbal force, use of force continuum almost, as far as stepping up from one level to the next to the next. We're going to talk with you a little bit more about that. It's commercial time yet again. If you folks want to call in, no one on the line right now, 749-5500 or 1-800-823-8255. I will try and take your call as soon as we cover one more thing that I want to talk about. If no one's on the line, well, we'll see what happens. Anyway, right now you're listening to Ballistic Radio on 55KRC, the talk station.
This is your exclusive home for Glenn Beck.
Oh, man.
Tomorrow at 9:06 on 55KRC, the talk station.
Welcome back to Ballistic Radio on 55KRC, the talk station, brought to you by Kyle's Gun Shop in Finneytown. On the line, we have Mr. Craig Douglas talking with us about all sorts of ways that we can avoid getting into trouble. Co-hosting with me, like I said at the beginning of the show, Andy Ulrich, who always loves the bumper music coming out of the commercials.
So, I'm a country guy.
Come on. He's a little bit country. I'm a little bit rock and roll, something like that. Anyway, if you want to call in, 749-5500 or 1-800-823-TALK, T-A-L-K. Craig, are you still there?
Yes, sir.
So want to talk a little bit more about the verbalization and all that and some of the other things that you teach. But just to make sure that we don't run out of time before I bring it up, you're going to be teaching a class up in Cleveland at the end of July, 26th through 28th. So, and I actually just talked to the gentleman that is hosting the class, Brad. Apparently, you've got 10 slots left. So, if anyone wants to go up there, they can see the schedule on your website. Or
yes, it's shivworks.com.
Yeah, and
it's
that's
on the website at shivworks.com. It's July 26th through 28th. It's a 20-hour class. It's the pretty much the main class I do, which is the extreme close quarters concepts class, ECQC, and
right.
I bill that as an overview of functional handgun skills at 0 to 5 feet.
Right, and that's ShivWorks, folks, for those who are not familiar with what a shiv is. You spell that S-H-I-V works, W-O-R-K-S.com. So, and the nice thing about ECQC, that's actually got the first part of that class is the managing unknown contacts that we've been doing, talking about tonight, right?
Correct, yeah. I pretty much try, with the exception of one course, I pretty much try and lead that in as the very first thing I teach, regardless of whether it's ECQC, whether it's a knife course, or whether it's an empty hand course. I always start with framing the problem of the criminal assault paradigm and then beginning with managing unknown contacts. Because I really think that's the most important thing I teach, typically in these conference formats. I'll usually teach that, because they're 2-hour modules, and I'll go into that, mainly because I think people benefit the most from that, because we don't – I'd much rather someone deselect themselves away from a robbery than have to use any kind of motor skill, draw a gun, a knife, or punch someone in the face.
Oh, yeah.
It's a lot cheaper, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
It is.
Just keep in mind – and I know the cliche, there's a lawyer attached to every bullet. Well, yeah, that is a cliche, but gunfights are going to be expensive for you, whether or not you were in the right in 99.9% of all of them. Every once in a while you get lucky. But going back to, and I really can't stress enough, because like I said, I took the managing unknown contacts. I've used it every day since I took it. I've actually used it to stay out of trouble, I think. Obviously, you don't have a crystal ball, so you can't tell exactly what is going to happen if you let something progress. But I certainly have used it to keep people away from me, which It works great for that if it goes well. So assuming that we verbally cannot keep someone off of us, they are coming in hot and we can't say anything to them to make that stop. What are the two assumptions that we're going to make as far as what's happening right there?
We're going to assume, okay, if we determine if we determine that this person is hostile, or we believe this person, you know, you could be wrong.
Yeah.
You believe this person's hostile. There are two things to probably assume. Number one, they're armed. Number two, there's more than one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So that goes into the other two prongs of the strategy template of managing unknown contacts, which is how we move and what we do with our hands. And we're obviously trying to maintain range when we initially recognize an encroachment problem from a stranger.
Yeah.
But when we move, what we're trying to do is we're trying to arc in such a way that we can maintain a visual focus with the person that we know is encroaching, but move in such a way where we can pull what was behind us into our peripheral vision without opening up a window of opportunity for the known problem. And the analogy I give people to the way to think about this visually is if this is the face of a clock and he's at 12 and I'm at six, I want to think about trying to arc up to either 3 or 9. And what that will do by kind of, you know, pinioning around on that arc is hopefully allow me to maintain visual contact with someone, but pull what was behind me into my peripheral vision without opening up a window of opportunity for a guy to drop, you know, a sucker punch on me or draw a gun or anything like that.
Right. And it's...
So that would be the second component. The third component would be trying to keep our hands relatively close to our head while we're talking to someone.
That's so you, I'll do two things here. It is so counterintuitive to try and arc away from someone. Even with you standing there telling me not to do it, that was the first thing that I tried to do. It takes a lot of practice. That's why going to one of these classes is kind of a nice thing, because you get to try it over and over again, but also see people, have people watching you, so if you make mistakes, you get called on it. Can you explain why we want to keep our hands up towards our head?
Absolutely. If we frame a criminal assault as an unequal initiative event, where either he can make the first move on me or I can make the first move on him, either way, usually when the move is made, the other person is not expecting it. If I'm the guy who's initiated upon, especially at close range, there are two things I have to achieve. I have two immediate goals. They are to stay conscious and stay on my feet. And before I can draw a gun, a knife, or execute some kind of cool martial arts, if my problem begins with slipping mobility, okay, I can't escape, or it begins with me semi or unconscious, then the initiative deficit that I'm already in is significantly deeper. So by having our hands relatively high, relatively close to our head, and I use a term that I borrowed from Jeff Thompson of UK combatives thing, called a fence, and the idea that your hands are somewhat of a barrier, not in a fighting stance or anything like that. It's not like your hands are up in boxing, but they are kind of high. Maybe your palms are outward. I tend to work with my fingers kind of steepled together. It's a non-confrontational hand pose, for lack of a better term. Your hands are up and relatively close to your head. So if someone does throw something towards your head, then you've reduced the amount of travel that your hands have to undergo to cover your head, thus giving yourself some time, because we're already in a time deficit to begin with, usually because we're verbally tasked.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, that I've... Do you think there's kind of a predisposition to give away the fact that we're carrying a gun? Have you noticed that?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's very common with gun guys, and I see it, and I call it picking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like your mom told you, when you go to Bobo, don't pick it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I see gun guys all the time when they start getting nervous, especially when we start, you know, getting very experiential with the training. We begin the training exercise with an encroachment problem, and they don't know if the person is benign or hostile. They're not quite sure. There's you know, some verbal back and forth going on. And we see gun guys, typically guys that carry concealed, will telegraph the fact that they're armed, okay, by picking and touching that gun with their elbow.
Blading their hip away.
blading their hip away, adjusting, you know, a cover garment, constantly touching it, that kind of thing.
It's something like that.
Very observable if you know what to look for.
Yeah. We got 2.5 minutes left. We actually got several callers on the line, but I'm not going to be able to get to all of you folks. I'm sorry. We've got Brenda. Craig, do you mind taking a call real quick?
Nope.
All right.
Sure.
Brenda on the line. She's got a question about conflict situations. Brenda, are you there?
Yes.
Okay. Real fast.
I've been in a couple confrontational situations where I've had people that were stealing from my store. And in one instance, the woman tried to, I told her to, you know, stay where she was, that I had called security, and she actually touched me, reached out and tried to push me, and I immediately just did this blood-curdling scream and said, get away from me, sit down. Now, is that really, like, should you just let them go? I mean, it's so personal, you know, when it's your business, and this time it worked out, but you know, I didn't know if she had a weapon or no weapon. Another guy came in and very openly took like $250 sweatshirts, and he started out my door, and he just kind of gave me this look that said, and what are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
And I immediately yelled thief, and the guy at the Netherlands whistled and got a mounted policeman. And,
yeah.
You know, I chased him, but it scared me after I did it.
Yeah. Craig, me or you?
Well, you know, Brenda, I think you answered your own question. You sound like a real common sense gal, you know, and you looked at what you did, and by your own words, you were kind of scared after the fact. And I think you know, challenging someone when you're relatively close. You said she reached out to shove you. It sounds like you'd already gotten pretty close to her, probably to see if she was stealing. You know, when that happened, I think maybe if you're going to challenge her, doing it from further away. But also, you hit the heart of it right there. Is it honestly worth you addressing, or should you just call the police and be a good witness? You know, and I'm not, and I totally understand it being personal when it's your business and things like that. And people say there's no property worth killing or dying over, but you know, we work our entire lives to pay for property, houses, cars, and stuff like that. So it's easy to get wrapped up into that. So
yeah.
I think probably maintaining more range if you're going to do it, but if you can not do it and be a good witness and let people with body armor and you know, less lethal stuff handle stuff like that, then that would probably be the way to go.
Yeah. Brenda, thanks for calling in. I appreciate it.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Craig, I appreciate you coming on the show. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, John.
Yeah. So next week we're going to be talking about what happens when we can't have a firearm on us. I mean, sometimes you just can't. So we're going to have Cecil Birch on from Immediate Action Jiu-Jitsu talking about just some of the things that we can do to be better prepared for a physical non-gun confrontation. Check out our website, ballisticradio.com, and like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe and see you next Sunday at 7 p.m. right here on 55 KRC, the talk station.